Gal.
Hey guys, and welcome to Get a Life Podcast Kunai. It's your boy Bish, and we're here back again with Will.
Hey guys.
Will, how are you, by the way? Haven't spoken to you in a while.
I'm still kind of getting over some sniffles and like head cold stuff and whatnot. I've been fighting for a couple weeks, things like that, and you know, just getting through the winter and the holidays. But you know, other than that, I've been doing all right. How about you?
Is it a harsh winter in Japan at the moment?
No, not at all, which has been really weird. We've had technically three like snow falls here, but like two were like as soon as they came they were gone, and then there was one snowfall that lasted like a couple days, but even then it didn't really stop anything. Like I was even able to go out and ride my bike in the snow and whatnot. It was just a little sloshy slick kind of stuff, which is really weird because like every other year that I've been here, we've had, you know, nice deep snowfall like right around Christmas like every year. So this has been unusually warm. Like yesterday it got up to like 50 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's what, like about 18 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, that's quite warm for this time of year, to be fair with you.
Yeah, it's really unusual. So and like it's weird because we had like a really kind of, I don't want to say super hot summer, but it was a steady hot summer. So everyone is expecting us to have like a steady cold winter this year. And so far it hasn't just happened, but usually we get like a really big gasp of winter right around February for some reason here.
Okay. Interesting. So, I didn't expect to be fair with you. Today we're going to be talking about Rail Wars. A very excellent anime. Before we get into the main bulk of the discussion, I'm just going to go through the disclaimer. Let me just find it. Ooh, that's not a good one. For you new folks, Get Alive Podcast Kunai is a monthly anime discussion under GAL, our new podcast network. Due to the nature of discussion, we can't avoid spoilers for the show to be discussed. And for those shows that are based off an existing piece of work, whether it's manga, light novel, or some other media form, we're not covering source material for those. If you'd like to recommend a show for us to watch and make an episode of Kunai, leave a suggestion on our Discord page. In addition to that, if you're listening on Spotify or on iTunes or wherever you're listening, make sure you give us a 5-star review. And also, if you're listening on Spotify, there is a little option where you can do a Q&A, so you can actually tell us directly which anime you'd like us to see. A big thanks to our sponsors Crunchyroll as well as Sugoimart. Will, do you know much about Rail Wars?
I know a bit here and there, so like we always talk about almost any episode that I come on here for, I always try to look into see some of the staff, you know, pedigree, lack of pedigree, things like that. What would you like me to talk about?
To be fair, I don't know. I've got notes on it. I don't know if you want me to cover
that.
I'll
go into a couple things. So, one of the first things that I noticed with the show, which I, you know, of course, back when the show first aired, I didn't, you know, pay much attention to it at all. But basically, like, even though it's listed as a Studio Passion show, it's more of a collab between them and Orange, if you know who Orange is.
Yes, they did Citrus.
No.
Did they not?
No, Orange is mostly known for their, like, kind of CG work. So, like, they did the recent, like, Beastars series.
Okay.
They also did Land of the Lustrous, which is amazing. They've done some more traditional, like, 2D hand-drawn stuff, too. But it almost always has, like, a type of a mix with CG. They're working on the upcoming Trigun Stampede that's coming out soon as well. So, I've kind of, like, a love-hate relationship with Orange because a lot of their stuff is quality. But I also just have a hard time with like pure CG stuff as well, and they've kind of gone back and forth between a mix of 2D and CG. So like basically the way this anime worked is that, you know, there was a Passion project, which you can kind of tell if you know anything about Passion just from the art style itself. So Passion is who did Citrus, but they're also the ones who took over High School DD. They also took over the Higurashi series as well.
Yes, and so, they did like something else. Well, I don't know if you're...
What's that?
They did something else.
Oh, yeah. Interspecies Reviewers.
Hell yeah. Interspecies Reviewers. They did that.
But here's one that I actually did not pay attention at all that they did that I really liked back when it was airing was Miroku-chan. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't. No. What's it about?
It's really good. To make a super long story short, it's about a girl who can basically see like evil spirits.
All right, okay.
Yeah, it's really good. And I don't normally like horror style anime. And I wouldn't put it, it's not a pure horror anime, but it kind of fits in that kind of wheelhouse. But it's just, it's excellent. It's really, really good. So like I said, it was kind of a collab between them. So Passion did the more traditional like 2D anime part of it, while Orange did the CG stuff. So like anytime you're seeing like the trains and stuff like that, that's Orange. But when you're just seeing the characters running around, that's Passion.
Okay, decent. Just to kind of give us a little bit of a backstory in terms of the show itself. So as you mentioned, well, it is done by Studio Orange as well as Studio Passion as well. It only has one season. Rail Wars began simulcasting in summer 2014 alongside Tokyo Ghoul SAO season 2, Monthly Girls Nozaki-kun, Hanano Monogatari, I think one of the Monogataris, Free season 2, Persona 4 Golden the Animation.
It was also though airing alongside things like Irregular Magic High School, Haikyuu, Hunter Hunter, Naruto, JoJo. So I mean, like, there was a whole bunch of shows going on at this time.
This show did not have a chance when it was airing, and I kind of feel bad. And to be fair with you, it's got a lot of competition for this, you know, especially when it comes to shonen. There was so much shonen shows that were coming out during that time, as you mentioned. So I understand why it kind of went under the radar, and I'm glad that we're kind of covering it on Kunai, and maybe this might be a lot of people's first interaction with this show. And that's another thing that I wanted to mention. The reason why we covered this on Kunai is because this show is incredibly difficult to find, and we kind of wanted to unearth a lot of shows that we may have watched in the past and to kind of rekindle what Kunai is about, if that makes sense. So this show, the only way you can watch it legally is if you go and buy Blu-rays and DVDs. And to be fair with you, Will, I actually did that, which is insane.
Oh, I know. You were telling me about that, and the you were a little bit surprised about some of the features.
Yes, the features. I didn't know this, but on DVDs and Blu-rays, most of the time, they're uncensored. What?
Yeah.
That is insane. That is genuinely insane. And this anime has that. So we're going to talk
that's
that
That's generally one of the kind of like ways that Japanese studios in general, one, try to like, you know, upsell people into buying the Blu-rays and DVDs, but, you know, it's as well as just generate sales in general. For instance, like, I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for this, but like, I actually hate Yuri on Ice. Like, I remember when Yuri on Ice was airing, and like, there were so many animation mistakes when that show was airing, and like, people tried to defend it and all this stuff the whole time. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to give it a second chance when the Blu-ray came out, which I saw, and they really cleaned up the animation. I still don't like the show. I still think it's overrated as hell, but the animation got cleaned up so much better. So that's just another thing that they usually use as a selling point, you know, in anime in general. Like, think of it basically like when you're watching the show weekly. Not only is it a commercial for the source material, but it's also a commercial to get you to eventually, hopefully, buy the Blu-ray later.
And that's very interesting as well, because obviously you do get a higher quality. Because I've also noticed that they do it with DBZ as well. They go out and they clean up a lot of the animation or reanimate some scenes. And it's quite interesting, because I didn't know, like, how come they don't give us that quality on, you know, if you're watching it on Crunchyroll, they don't always give you that DVD quality. It's just the streaming quality. You know what I mean? It's just the simulcast.
It's time constraints is what it is. I mean, because you got to think how hard these animators are working.
No, I mean, after the fact. So after the Blu-ray's been released, we don't get an updated version with the Blu-ray. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Services.
Some places do that, you know, I think. But it's usually after a show has been a little bit older. Like, I think, like, on, what is it? What's that website? Retro Crush. I think a lot of their stuff that they are doing now is whatever quality they're getting from DVDs and Blu-rays. Of course, a lot of their shows are older anyway, so it's still going to be older animation.
Yeah.
But you can still tell that it's been, like, at least upscaled or something. Like, you know, from when it originally aired, maybe in 480p, mm-hmm. maybe now it's in 720.
See, I remember Funimation used to do that with, once again, with Dragon Ball and stuff like that. They would use the Blu-ray versions just because it was just a lot cleaner in terms of animation and stuff. But we're not talking about Dragon Ball. We're talking about Rare Wars. And Will, yes. Can I get into my first impressions? Because I'm really excited.
Please tell me. I'm excited to hear this.
Before I get into my first impressions, I really want to set the scene for you guys and let y'all know.
Well, let me ask you this. I want to know how you were first exposed to this show yourself. Like, you can use that and then kind of, like, run into your first impressions.
That's what I was going to get into. So I'm going to let you know how I got into it. So it's kind of weird, I'm not going to lie, because there was a few anime I got into in this season because of a musical artist known as DJ Joe. They normally do like remixes of popular anime OPs and endings. Their music kind of went viral in like 2014 because they were covering a lot of the shows that were being simulcasted. So they did like SAO season 2's OP and ending, just like a dubstep or an EDM remix, that kind of stuff. They did it for SAO season 2, Kill la Kill. And I heard their one for Unravel, you know, the one for Tokyo Ghoul.
Mm-hmm.
And I never watched Tokyo Ghoul. I still haven't. So I was like, okay, this is a good remix. And randomly, after that one played, YouTube auto played the next one, which was the Rail Wars OP. And it was like a trap and bass remix. And it was such a banger. I was like, I need to see what this anime is, right? It made me want to watch the anime. And just for some context, this was after the anime had aired completely, maybe like a couple of months, 2-3 months. Almost. So I knew it was airing during that time. I just didn't watch it simulcast. So I watched it on Crunchyroll maybe like 3 or 4 months after the fact. Yes. And the reason why that was because I was watching SAO. That was like my main focus. Sword Art Online season 2. I wanted to watch that. I was hyped. You know, I used to love Sword Art back in the day. I can't really get into the story now, but I binged this show during Christmas 2014. And, you know, the anime still was kind of like new to me at that time. And even now on the rewatch, it was quite new to me. It was as if I was watching it from the very beginning all over again, if that makes sense. Like, I couldn't remember much of the story. I do remember that I loved the idea of the show. Like,
I totally understand it. I have a very similar kind of experience to you, but please continue.
Like I said, I do like the idea of the show because it gave me an insight into the Japanese rail system and industry in general. And there's so many engaging things in the show, especially when they start talking about trains. I'm not a train otaku by any means, but I do kind of like that idea of machinery. Like, I'm not gonna go in and be like, oh, this is the model number of this train or that train. It's the same with cars. Like, I'm not gonna go in and be like, oh, look at that engine and this and that. No, if the car looks cool, I'm like, oh, that looks like a cool car. It's the same with the trains, right? It's like, I'm more into the exteriors and the interiors and the idea that there is an engine inside. Like, that kind of really excites me a little bit. But yeah, at the time it was something that I'd never seen before, especially I was a new anime fan. So I started watching anime in 2012, and that was just like romance anime, Toradora. I didn't even watch Shonen at the time. 2014, we were like 1 year into Kunai. So just for context, it was like literally 1 year into Kunai, and I was watching anime for myself, if that makes sense. Like, a lot of the anime that I was watching was either Kunai suggestions or it was suggestions from my friend Daniil. It wasn't really anime that I actually went out and watched on my own accord. And I think Rail Wars might have been one of the first animes that I actually went out and watched independently. And I can't really remember my initial first impressions because it was so long ago and the show was, you know, escaped my mind, like I mentioned. But I'm gonna give you my first impressions of the rewatch. But before I do that, I want to know, Will, how did you get into the show?
So, like I was saying, I have kind of a sort of similar experience to you where I don't remember everything that I was watching back at this time. I know I was watching Space Dandy, I know I was watching Monthly Girls and Sword Art Online as well, which SAO 2 is still like my favorite, you know, part of the series. But anyway, but I remember at this time I was on the Crunchyroll forums a lot, and I remember seeing a lot of other people talking about the show, and most people were clowning on it and everything like that, which originally got me. And I'm one of those people, like, if someone's clowning on something, it makes me want to give it a chance. Versus if someone's hyping something up, I'm like, maybe I don't want to watch this one. Okay. I'm kind of like that anti-hype kind of guy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I also try to support shows that are being, you know, hated on and see if it's justified or not. And I remember this show was getting a lot of hate, which we'll get into later and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't watch it while it was airing, but it was one of those shows I kind of put on the back burner. And I do that every season. Like, I limit myself to what I'm watching each season, and then, like, I'll add things to my backlog, and then I'll watch it, like, right after the season airs or in between shows the next season. So that's how I did with this show. I watched it a little bit after the season actually aired itself. And I, you know, I don't remember a lot of my first impressions back then, but I do remember really enjoying the show back then, because I love trains anyway. So I still remember when I got in, and I'm like, oh, cool, it's gonna be an anime about, you know, Japanese trains, which is a big part of the culture over here in Japan. And this was also before I came to Japan too, so I kind of wanted to get a glimpse at some of the things that I might, you know, see or experience while I was over here. And like I said, outside of really enjoying it when I first watched it, I don't remember a whole lot of my first impressions out of that, other than I still remember kind of like being surprised by some of the fan service in the show.
Okay.
So that's, you know, and but like I said, for me, not a turnoff or anything. I just remember I wasn't expecting it.
Okay.
Because I didn't know anything about the source or the creators or anything like that.
Interesting. Okay.
Oh, but I will say also, just like you, I mean, from the minute, you know, I first heard the opening, I loved it. You know, opening and the ending both. It's one of those things, like, when you're watching it, if it gives you that option, do you want to skip? Nope. I will listen to it every time.
Agreed.
And watch it, because visually it's really cool too.
Yes. We'll get into that a little bit later on in the show, because I've got quite a lot of notes on that. But back to the first impressions, I do remember, like, when binge watching, I was really excited by the show. And in fact, I watched it in one sitting. At least at that time, it was very rare that I binged shows. So, you know, I wasn't really paying much attention to the story, but I do know that I really, really loved it. I think this time I was quite intrigued, but for different reasons. And I couldn't remember the show at all, like I mentioned, other than the fact that I enjoyed it. So from the get-go, I found myself asking a lot of questions upon my rewatch. Why are they doing weapons training for a national rail job in Japan? That's something that didn't make sense to me, because obviously Japan, they don't have guns, and I don't know if policemen do carry guns in Japan.
This is one thing I wanted to kind of like bring up during this too. So it's one of the things that, like, if you just even look up the description of the show, is because it's an alternate universe where the government still runs the railway, where it's like, it's not government run in real life. It's, okay, you know, it's different private companies that they partner with the government. But in this world of the anime, the government is still the ones in control of all the rail lines and everything. Mm-hmm. So there's still government employees, and that's why they are basically like a police force. Well, they're police force trainees, which is why they're allowed to have, you know, the guns and going through the training and all stuff. And yes, policemen in Japan do have guns, but you only see it a little bit in the show. But they even show it where it's like they're connected to their like belts and their waist by like a line. Like, they're really controlled on how and when they can use them, which is kind of like why even during the show they were surprised with Sakurai. They were like, wait, you have a gun?
See, that was the thing that kind of confused me a little bit as well. But you've answered my questions in that. The first thing that kind of went through my mind as well was, we have a thing in the UK called British Transport Police, and literally that's their job. Their job is to be police for like the transports of buses, trains, any sort of road accidents, things like that. And some of them do carry guns depending on which area of London. Like, if you're in central London, you'll see policemen with M4s and like MP5s, like actual submachine guns and rifles. It's central London. There's a lot of stuff that can go wrong there. So it was kind of like that. Another thing, the first few episodes of the show gave me vibes of Police Academy. I don't know if you remember Police Academy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I loved those movies when I was a kid, and I can totally see that.
And I was like, oh my god, when are we gonna see like Michael Winslow and like, din, 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 din. You know what I'm talking about? Like, I was expecting the Police Academy music to start playing, because obviously the first few episodes are there to like introduce you to the characters, introduce you to what's going on, because I know that there may be a lot of viewers that might not understand the way that Japan kind of takes the rail system seriously. Like, you wouldn't see that in any other country, like in terms of the trains, how efficient they are. They always come in on a certain time, because that's another thing I noticed during the show, is that they go in and they're like, okay, this train is supposed to depart at 7:03, and I'm like, that's such a precise time. Like,
they've got it down to the minute.
And that's the thing, like, they get it down to the minute, and I did some research on it, and it's like, even if the train is like 2 minutes late or like 10 minutes late, they apologize and they like, it's,
oh yeah, so I've actually experienced that. I've been on a train where like we got delayed, and like we got to the station, I want to say it was like 4 minutes later than we were supposed to, and then there were gentlemen that were like lined up on the platform like bowing as the train pulled in. I was like, really?
It's insane, because like if you go to Germany, for example, sorry if there's any Germans listening, maybe you might agree with me, but if you ever go to Germany, like, trains will be delayed like 45 minutes, 20 minutes, and it's like a normal thing over there. Like, it's not as bad in the UK, like, in terms of the tube service and stuff. Like, at most, the train will be delayed by 10 minutes, you know? Like, it's not, like, the services are quite reliable, not as reliable as in Japan, but when I saw that, I was like, what the hell? Like, these people know when the train's gonna depart, when it's gonna arrive. Like, there's moments in the show as well where they talk about, okay, if you take this route, you'll arrive before the rest of them, and then join the train again. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, what's going on? But yeah, I wasn't too sure how much of the training was believable, to be honest with you.
I'll point out one thing that was very accurate, which I'm surprised they didn't actually bring it up more in this series, like, especially parts where they actually show, like, the train drivers and stuff. But, like, the part where Takayama, he was practicing the pointing and naming out the things, everything, that's something that actual train drivers do in Japan, too. Like, if you ever are in the front of the train and you sit behind them, you'll hear them, like, talking to themselves and pointing as they're going and stuff like that. And, like, because they actually did a study that when the train drivers and conductors do this sort of thing, it literally, like, has, like, reduced, like, accidents and, like, faulty things from happening by some ridiculous number, like 98%.
I don't know how it is in the UK, but there's not, I don't think there's many people that are that into trains. There may be some train spotters and stuff, and I know that there's a chap on TikTok, many people might know of him, I can't remember his name, but he does all that kind of content. I didn't think that people would still kind of be into that today. But like I mentioned, like, the test with the C62, you know, the steam train, that was excellent, and it kind of,
yeah,
you know, it was really awesome, and it, in terms of detail, it was great, and it served as an excellent introduction to the main cast, because you see them working together as a team, and it shows off their personalities, right? Similar, once again, to the Police Academy films. Like, literally, if this was a Police Academy film, that sounds like something that would come straight out of those films. And that's not necessarily an insult, because it's interesting, because it's very wacky, because I don't know if you ever go out and, you know, work for, you know, the Japanese rail system, or any sort of rail system in general, if they'd go out and be like, okay, you need to go and make sure that you work as a team by making sure that the steam train continues to run. Like, that's not really something. A lot of these trains can tend to be like decommissioned and things like that. I'm not sure in Japan if they still have steam trains, but a lot of these trains tend to be decommissioned and it's not really used as much anymore.
They do, but they usually, like, they only bring them out for like holidays and, okay, like special trips and things like that. Like, usually, like, if they wheel them out, it's like a big occasion, like maybe not even like a once a year type deal. But yeah, they still keep them, like, but it's weird. I was gonna bring this up later, but I'll bring it up now. Like, even where I live, there's not one but two train museums within a, like, a 2 hour trip of where I live and everything. Like, when you go to them, like, it's looked like they could take the trains, wheel them right out of the museum, and they'd be running right now. They just still keep them up and maintained and everything.
But yeah, I'd also noticed that at the start, 15 minutes into episode one, we see some ecchi content, panty shots and accidental grabbing of things, and it was really unnecessary. And this is part of my first impressions. It was really unnecessary, and it kind of took away from the show's main focus, which is trains. The fan service this early on put a kind of bitter taste in my mouth, and I wasn't expecting it for this show.
I'm not going to defend it or anything like that, which I totally understand it, but, you know, like, when you wanted me to, like, look a bit into the show and everything, which I did, it's one of those things, too, where the gentleman who wrote it and the original artist from the light novels, they're all about fan service, but they're about fan service both in the trains and with girls. Like, I looked up the artist, like, on his Pixiv account, and, like, all of his art is, like, all of, like, trains and pretty girls. Trains and pretty girls. So that's, like, this is kind of, like, their like, combo creation where they get to talk about trains and pretty girls.
Okay.
That's basically... And you have to think about, too, so, like, this show, like, the actual genres for it are, you know, action, ecchi, detective, harem, and workplace is what it's all listed as, which, I mean, it's kind of fitting, which, honestly, like, what I still remember when I first was watching it, I wasn't expecting the ecchi part or the harem part. I expected it to be some kind of maybe rom-com stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, think about a target audience for something like this. Like, number one, it's a very Japanese show just because of the content, because of Japanese culture with trains and everything. Yeah. And two, most people that are into trains and pretty girls are teenage boys, you know, 12-year-old, 13-year-old and older, you know, in that kind of range. So that target audience would be all about that. So again, watching this later in life as an adult, I could kind of understand how it would be kind of jarring at times, but mm-hmm. I'm also not, you know, we are not really the target audience for a show like
Correct.
This, which I think a lot of people forget about that mm-hmm. when they go on like rants and, you know, their ratings of shows. It's absolutely fine for you to not like ecchi content and stuff like that, but put yourself in the shoes and the mindset of like who they're targeting this for, and you know, the mindset of the audience that would typically be watching something like this. That's all I'm saying.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, to be fair with you, I didn't really consider that even when writing my notes, that the audience would most likely be, you know, pubescent boys and things like that. That does make sense now that you mention it, but I can understand, like, for me, at least initially, like, I don't mind fan service. And you guys know, if you listen to Kunai, we've spoken about fan service before, but for me, it was more of a structural thing, right? Like, we barely know these characters, and it's like 15 minutes into the show, and there was a panty shot, and I was like, is this going to be consistent throughout the rest of the show? And it was a worry in the back of my head, because it's like, fine, we can get fan service, but at the same time, fan service, especially in anime, is kind of like a tool to kind of retain certain viewers' attention. Like, for example, when you have fan service, it tends to be like, what, midway through the show, you have a beach episode, or you have an onsen episode, or whatever, right? In most sort of harem or rom-com or any sort of anime like that. And it's there to kind of like be a circuit breaker, effectively, right? That's how it normally is.
But also think, you know, and again, this isn't a defense of the show. I'm just saying, think about like the studio behind it being Passion. That's just kind of like
what
their
they do.
Forte. It's not their entire shtick, but I mean, I would say like 90% of the shows that they make are heavy, you know, fan service shows in one way or another, where, you know, whether it's action fan service or sexy time fan service or both in the same show.
And that's fair enough, to be fair with you. And I mean, that's in terms of studio, it makes sense that they were the studio to take this particular adaptation on. I'm not going to debate that by any means. I completely agree. They just fit, right? But I want to know, Will, what was your first impressions of the show?
Well, and like I said, just to, you know, maybe kind of like contradict myself, I still remember I was like you. I didn't fully binge it all in one day, but I remember I watched it in maybe 2 or 3 days. And I want to say I watched it during that next like fall season of anime in between some other shows. But anyway, I went into it, like I said, mostly blind, other than comments that I saw in the Crunchyroll forums. And I wasn't expecting the fan service-y type stuff. I was fully expecting it to be train fan service, which there is. I was honestly wanting more of that because I'm actually a train guy myself. Like, I built model trains when I was a kid and all that kind of stuff. So I was expecting more of that. And I was kind of like, I guess the best way you could say it, I was thrown off of my expectations by the fan service actually in the show. I was also thrown off in the harem aspect of the show. I wasn't expecting that part at all. But otherwise, like I mentioned earlier in our recording, that I still really enjoyed the show as far as it just being a fun show and everything. So, you know, my first impression was I was enjoying it as being a train guy and also being someone that likes, you know, cute girls doing cute things type of thing. But I too was not expecting all the fan service in the show.
Moving on to, you know, our favorite moments and episodes, and I have a lot to say, Will, so I kind of want to kind of see what your favorite moments and episodes were first, in case maybe we might have the same ones.
All right, so let me see. I don't have an out and out absolute favorite episode. I really liked the arc, though, when they went out for their, like, their training, and then they had to use the pedal train car.
Yeah.
To get back down the mountain to deliver the organ because of the bad weather and the rock and mudslide and all that. Because at that point, they were really learning, you know, they were more than learning, they were more congealing on how to actually work as a unit, as a team. But they were still also kind of being thrown off by Takayama at the time, where you could, at this point, it was well established that, you know, most of the girls around him liked him, and they were hoping that he was still going to be around around after they, you know, they finished their training, got out of school and all that stuff, but he's so insistent on being a trained driver. But then him, you know, kind of coming into his own, being a leader of this group and being more than just a trained driver. Mm-hmm. I just really liked how they came together in that arc. Now, I will say that arc, even though I liked it a whole lot, it did kind of turn me off with some of the stuff that I'm like, oh, this wouldn't really happen, you know.
Like what?
Some of the more fantasy, I guess you'd say, elements of the show. But overall, I just really enjoyed. There was those two episodes, I believe, over episodes 8 and 9. So this is deep into it. But I just really liked that whole series of giving all four of those main characters kind of like time to shine, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I actually liked those episodes as well. But to be fair with you, I really loved episode 2. With the bomb threat.
Yeah. That was the first episode I really took notes on.
Yeah.
That was the episode that I think we really got to understand more of Sakurai as mm-hmm. a character as mm-hmm. well.
What I liked about the episode as well is because it starts off very mundane, you know, where they're just effectively, Sakurai was like, hey, we're just mall cops. And literally that's what they are at that point. You know, they're walking around the station, you know, they're helping old ladies, that kind of stuff. And then it just leads you to believe that. And then bam, you're in for a roller coaster ride. You've got this very tense bomb defusal, taking elements and making callbacks to most of the normal background info that you see, right? The fact that, oh, that someone left a dog in the lost and found, that kind of thing. And the fact that the bomb was inside the dog's carrier. Like, there's certain things that you think in your head that, oh, this is just someone lost a dog. That's just a boring part of the story. It happens at train stations, that kind of stuff, right? Or when they were having lunch and it was like a fancy dessert with liquid nitrogen. Sakurai using her initiative and being like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to use this liquid nitrogen to freeze the circuitry. I will say this within this episode, I don't think the science is really correct.
There's quite a bit of that throughout the series. Like I said, they definitely embellished a bit in everything. So like I would say, going back to the guys that, you know, created the story, it kind of seems like to be their forte. It's like they're influenced by things that they know in real life, but it's like they kind of just wanted to like get on with things and just keep talking about trains and girls.
Yeah, the thing I don't get, especially with the circuitry and stuff, is that like liquid nitrogen doesn't really stop the flow of electricity. Electricity doesn't work like that. You know what I mean? Like, it may do in certain conditions, but like Sakurai was so like confident of that. And like, look, depending on what is occurring and what type of circuitry you're using, liquid nitrogen would in fact make the resistance lower.
Yeah, this show definitely has a lot of like, just, you know, turn your brain off and enjoy.
I know, but I could look, dude, I remember like studying physics in college and stuff, and this kind of shit like really nagged at me, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, genuinely, like making the resistance lower, that would basically allow a higher current to flow. That doesn't, like, what? Like, I know it's anime, they're not gonna go into hyper detail, but it felt like a Deus Ex Machina. Like, that was one thing that annoyed me.
Oh Lord, here we go.
Look, I'm sorry, Will.
Every episode, bitch. Not everything is a Deus
Ex. No, this show has a lot of Deus Ex Machina. No, I'm
Stop
sorry.
It.
Okay,
Stop
okay,
it.
Okay,
Move
okay,
on. Okay, Moving
okay.
on. Keep
okay,
going.
I will say this though. Within that episode, the fan service wasn't needed. Like, for example, Sakurai says, if you are on my chest, you'll be able to reach. And what a load of hot garbage. Okay, that didn't need to be there. Like, I will overlook it because the episode was really intense, and like, you can be argued that it was added for comedic relief to kind of lower down the tension, but I don't think it's the case because the tension already was built slowly throughout the episode, and it wasn't like high tension from the beginning, right? It was slowly built, so you don't really need to bring down that tension straight away in a very high tense scenario. It doesn't need to have a joke or fan service to bring that tension down. And this is something that I will mention. If fan service and jokes want to be implemented, it should be done before or after action-packed scenes, not during. So I don't have an issue with fan service. I don't have an issue with jokes. But in the middle of that moment, they're defusing a bomb, right? It's like, okay, have it afterwards. And which we did. We did get fan service after, but not in the middle of bomb defuse. Like, that's a bit silly to me.
Maybe they were just using it as a tension breaker kind of thing. I mean, I understand what you're saying. Again, I'm not defending it, but at the same time, I'm not as, you know, adversely turned off to it. I'm not that, you know, upset about it either.
Another thing that I will mention, and this is something I wrote in my notes, if you are a degenerate, then I'd say that episode 6 would be your favorite episode of the show, because especially if you are like me...
You're totally stepping over anything I was getting ready to bring up now.
Oh, about episode 6?
Anyway, keep going. Episode 6 was one of the episodes that I say that I enjoyed, but for me, it wasn't from the degeneracy aspect of it. For me, it was because of just getting to learn more about Haruka and Takayama, and like her bringing up the 8 years, 3 months, 15 mm-hmm. days, all that type of stuff.
I'm going to say something about that. I'll let you say something, but I want to say the initial thing, that the whole degenerate point. So I watched the show uncensored. I didn't know that the Blu-ray and the DVD version was uncensored. And in the beginning, you see a lot of ladies changing their clothes and going into the shower. And you see everything. And that shocked the shit out of me. I was like, what the fuck? Like, am I supposed to be watching? I felt bad. Like, I was looking around. I was like, am I supposed to be watching this? Like, it felt weird. And that shocked the shit out of me. Like, genuinely. Because I'm not used to watching anime uncensored. And I didn't know that was a thing in Blu-rays. I was thinking, did I get like a default? Like, was it a faulty version or something? Like, am I supposed to be seeing this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally like to... I still remember when that first started, I was like, wow, I was not expecting this. But at the same time, it was still just showing like the group of the female characters just having their casual conversation away from the boys and everything too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's definitely a fan service scene, but I can kind of also understand where they were just trying to, you know, show them all talking together too.
And you know what? I don't mind that, because they did actually have good conversation during that time. And I don't mind the fan service element, but I was just shocked to see everything. I was like, what? Like, for me, even when I'm watching an ecchi show, I don't think I've ever seen any anime uncensored before. So for me, that was more so, I wouldn't say an issue from the show, but that was an issue from the fact that I was watching an uncensored version on a Blu-ray. So I can't fault that on the show, if that makes sense. But I am interested to know your thoughts on episode 6, because for me, I have some very interesting opinions on it. But I wanted to hear what you say, because I might have to refute what you're saying.
I just thought that it was a mostly, what's the way I want to use that, kind of like Police Academy, you know, kind of description, where it's a lot of hijinks, like there's a lot of misunderstandings in the whole chase, which I thought there was a lot of like absurd moments, but also they were absurdly funny moments. But then also, like I said, getting to learn a bit more about Haruka and her connection with Takayama, like, you know, because you could tell early on in the show that she likes him and everything, but I was like, they never really had gotten much into the whys and hows of it until this episode, where you learn that, you know, when they were both younger, that he like kind of, you know, saved her and everything when she was trapped and whatnot, and reunited her with her, I think it was her grandfather. So that's what I was just more into it, because of learning more about, you know, her and their past together. That's why I enjoyed that episode, because up to that point, we didn't really know a whole lot about her and why she was so close with Takayama.
Yes. And I thought that was quite nice, the fact that we did get that sort of context. I think that is the right word, right? So even then, the hijinks was quite a really interesting, pretty smart as well. But there were certain things within the episode that I was questioning. Like, for example, who were those two thugs? We didn't even find out. Were they there to, like, break in? Like, that seemed a bit odd to me, first of all. I didn't know what was going on there. I thought it was really funny that Takayama didn't read the second part of the postcard that was just advertising.
Yeah, when they got to that point, I was like, really? Like, he couldn't tell there was another part there? Like, if you've ever, like, you know, granted, this is a very Japanese thing, the way Japanese send letters, but anytime you get one of those envelopes and letters, like if there's multiple pages, there'll be like a little like kind of like tab that even if you can't see it, you can feel it to be like, oh, there's another thing I'm supposed to turn over here.
Yeah, and I thought it was quite funny. And like you said, it was very Police Academy-esque, because it was just like, shit, that doesn't happen in real life. But it was just quite nice. It was just like, you get to see these characters outside of their day-to-day environment, which was very interesting. Obviously, you didn't see all of the other characters. One of the main cast wasn't there, but the rest of them you do get to see, and you get to see them in their own sort of clothing as well, and how they look outside. Because this was another thing. I know that they technically, what, they're like high school age, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, they're basically going to specialize high school for this, you know, train department.
So that was another thing that I didn't realize. Like, I didn't realize that these were high school students. I thought that these were like, because in the UK we have this thing called apprenticeships, right? So as soon as you finish like high school, like if you're 16 or 18 or whatever, you could do this thing where you kind of get like a paid internship and do like a vocational course. So if you wanted to become a mechanic, you work as a mechanic and you learn on the job, and then you get like a qualification after that.
Excuse me, they have similar things here in Japan. So of course you have like your more general type high schools, but then you also have high schools that are kind of like specialized. So like I said, I think I've talked about this before. When you go to high school in Japan, it's almost like a pre-college kind of thing. So this is why, like, when kids go to high school, and like you'll see it in anime where they're studying to test to get into certain high schools, because those schools are like, they're not necessarily specialized. Like, all high schools usually have like a general studies type of thing, but then they have something that they're really good at, whether it might be like mathematics, while it might be like engineering, while it might be science, etc. So you try to test to get into that school for whatever profession you're thinking you might want to go into someday.
There were some things that we did get to see, and we saw, as you mentioned, why Takayama is so highly revered by his peers even. And I thought that was a very nice story. I did think, and I don't know if you can agree with me, Will, but I did some research on the light novel, and I did some research on spin-offs of the light novel.
Yeah, I knew there were some spin-offs, but I didn't know anything about them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we don't kind of talk about this on Kunai, but the fact that they mentioned the granddad, I was like, okay, why is he such a prevalent character? Okay, and then it made me think, okay, maybe Haruka is like, there's more to her story than meets the eye. And then it made me think, okay, so why was she in that cupboard? Like, there were so many questions. But then part of me thinks, is this explained in the light novel? Do you know what I mean? And I have a feeling it is, because the light novel is very extensive. There's 20 volumes of light novel. And for those that don't know, a volume of light novel can cover a lot more story than a volume of manga, for example, because it's mostly text. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right? So 20 volumes of this light novel. I have a feeling that there's a lot of information to kind of make this show get out there, if that makes sense. Like, just to make it running on 12 episodes, they had to cut out a lot. I haven't been able to read the light novel because there is no English translation. So I don't know what is missing.
Sadly, that's a case with a lot of series these days.
Yeah, and to be fair with you, the manga would often get a translation, but the light novels not so much, because there's just more text to work with. But I think that there is a case in which there is information that we're not being told about in the anime that is present in the light novel, because there's certain hints, and it's throughout the series as well. And we mentioned before on Kunai that anime is there to advertise for the source material, right? Because this show is mainly designed for a Japanese audience. If you are in Japan and you're watching this show and you're like, okay, what is this whole granddad thing about? I might go and read the light novel. That kind of thing. I think it's kind of designed for them. Is it a shitty thing? Yes. I would have liked more context to know who is her granddad. Is her granddad someone of high standing? Because they mention later on in the series, right, where Takayama mentions, oh, you have this very regal sense about you, as if you're a princess, right? And she mentioned that she went to study in England amongst royals. So it makes me think, like, why is she part of this, right? Is someone in her family very high up in the Japanese rail system? I don't know.
As someone going on anime only, that's a lot of, you know, empty questions there.
That's a concern. Like, as much as I kind of like it, because obviously this show has a sort of detective theme to it, right? And the show allows you to think on how can they kind of get themselves out of this situation or that situation. And that's one of a strong points about the show. You kind of end up thinking too hard because there's some information that is missing. You want to know more. Like, how does Haruka know a prince? Like, that's something. Right, it's like, how do they know each other? Why is this happening? What is this other information? Even when we go for Bernina, whatever her name is.
Yeah, and there's little hints all throughout the show that you could definitely tell that Haruka at least comes from some kind of family of prominence. Just from like the little like background scenes you see to just the way that she dresses in like her normal clothes and carries herself, she's definitely of some type of, you know, at least a wealthy family, if nothing else.
Correct. And you see that with other characters as well, because even with Sakurai, she always, when she was defusing the bomb, she was like, oh, my dad taught me this. And then she was like, oh, my dad always wanted me to be in the police force. And I'm like, okay, well, is your dad like a police officer, or is he like police commanders? What was it?
I think that her dad was like special forces or something.
Oh,
like that.
Okay.
I can't remember. I could have swore they mentioned it somewhere, but
that's the thing. It's like, okay, well, she's a kid that has experience with firearms, like, especially in Japan, that's not something that you'd know how to use, right? Unless, as you mentioned, your father was in special forces or like army or something. And it is quite interesting, and there's more information that I want to know, because obviously that would kind of let us know more about her as a character and things like that. I also loved the episodes 9 and 8, like I mentioned, the episode with the organs.
Yeah, those were the ones that I was talking about earlier. Yep,
fantastic episodes. And I also like the whole Prince arc as well, and there's a special reason why I like those episodes, because they were the more tense episodes of the show. So I find that the way that the show is structured in terms of story, that the later half of the show, when we're talking episode 8, 9, 10, 11, even 12, which is the final episode, they were incredibly tense, right? We got to see those moments where it was about the trains. Yes, we did get to see fan servicey moments, no doubt about it, but I think it was more organized. We didn't kind of get fan service all the time, and it didn't kind of break the tension of the show. There were certain moments where, yes, well, I will agree that there's like, scientifically, this doesn't fucking make sense, like using the whole counterweight thing. Like, for example, these are young kids, right? They're not gonna weigh a lot, you know. Let's say they're what, 16 years old, 18 maybe, especially Japanese people, they don't really weigh much. Okay, at most they'd be like what, 60 kilograms, 70 maybe. So it's like, how is that going to be a counterweight for something that probably weighs a ton? That doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? You know, when they're trying to balance the rails and stuff.
I still remember watching those parts, and like, I kept thinking to myself, it's going to take like all of them except for Takayama to be like leaning on the sides and all that type of stuff with as little as they weigh. Like, I could tell, like Sakurai herself, she couldn't have weighed much at all with as like as athletic of a build as mm-hmm. she was and everything. I was like, why are they getting Haruka's big butt over there? And then at one point where she was like, well, I can put my butt on the side right here, you know?
Yeah, and it's quite funny as well. It's like, okay, there's certain things, like, kind of feels like it comes straight out of cartoons, like Looney Tunes or whatever. Like when, I forgot his name, but you know, the guy that eats a lot.
Iwazumi?
Yeah, Iwazumi. The way Iwazumi, instead of the break, he literally jumps at the back and he's holding for dear life.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, well, yep. This is an MHA, okay? It's so
like
dumb.
I said, there's little moments like that, but at the same time, it was still kind of fun and neat to see that kind of stuff.
It was. And I mean, it didn't take away from my enjoyment. And in fact, it made me think, oh, wow, this is kind of badass. And I think you kind of need that in a show that's predominantly about trains, which is a very boring topic anyway, but you kind of need that action. And I did not care. Like, not in a bad way. I didn't care that this was unrealistic. Like, in fact, I really did enjoy it, because it was like, yes, are they going to make it? Are they going to be able to hand those organs in? And there was so much as well that it was like, oh my God, especially because they did it in a very good way, where initially I had an issue with the way that the story was structured, because it felt like, at least for the first 5-6 episodes, that these episodes don't mean anything. They're just like, nothing is like interconnected, and it just felt weird. But then when you're watching episode 8 and 9, finally you get an arc that spans over 2 episodes, right? And you get to learn more about the trains, you learn more about the rail system in Japan, and how certain rails weren't, you know, maintained since the Meiji era and that kind of stuff. And I thought that was really cool, like, to learn more about that.
That was my one kind of my biggest gripe on the show, is I kept wanting them to go more into the train side of it and everything. Like, because there was little hints of it here and there, even leading up to this point, where Takayama, like, he could even just look at a train and know the model number of it and know like what its predecessor was or what led to its design and stuff like that, and they would just mention it in passing and then go on to the next thing. I'm like, wait, talk more about the train. I want to know more.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Unfortunately, you don't get that much opportunity to see that. But I feel that in those 2 episodes, and even episode 10 and 11, you see that a lot more. Another thing that I did enjoy was, I don't know if you've seen like those kind of films. I don't know if Air Force One is one of them. You know, like that film where like Air Force One gets hijacked, and it's like, who's in that film?
Harrison Ford. Get off my plane.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. It kind of felt like, I know it was on a train, but it kind of felt like that, because it was in close spaces and you have a high value target, in this case a prince, not the president. It kind of gave that vibe. Obviously it's not the exact same, but I kind of liked that. And even the lighting, you know, the fact that it was taken on a sleeper train, right? A train that you'd most likely sleep in and, you know, take showers in and whatnot, right? A train that's designed to be running through the nighttime. It kind of gave that really cool vibe. Like, you saw a different scenery within the show. It was very tense as well. And I thought it was fucking genius.
I would say that was one of the episodes that I wrote down that I liked as well. The only thing, my one gripe with that episode is that as soon as I saw the prince, I was like, that's not a prince.
Yeah, that's a princess.
I knew it from the first second, and I knew where it was going to go. That was my one gripe with that. But just like you, I loved all the rest of it. I loved the tense part of it. And that's one thing that was kind of weird about the show in general, is that it would have like very kind of like, you know, lighthearted comedic moments that would then lead into all of a sudden very serious and tense moments.
Yes.
You know, where they were like interspersed. It was like that through the whole show, starting with episode 2. But then you just got that mostly more serious stuff starting really with episode 8 onwards.
You know what? I would have liked to have seen more serious, because I thought it was very odd, like right before that whole organ scenario, you know, episode 7. And I was like, when did this become a harem? Because initially when I was watching it, and even rewatching it for Kunai, I didn't remember this show as a harem. And I didn't look at the tag. So I was just like,
I was going to mention that too. So I, like I said, I remember little bits and pieces from when I originally watched it back in 2014. So it's been 8 years basically since watching it, and I did not remember this being a harem, but that's basically what it is. Because like, that's one of the things that annoyed me about the show, is like, why is it that every female in this series like was instantly attracted to Takayama? Like, there was no like even build up to it. It was like, as soon as like they had their first scene together, the girl was like into him.
Yes. You know what, that brings me into characters, and I think that's a perfect segue, because I did mention this in my character segment, that I don't think that there's enough character development. And even if there is, right, even if there is character development for characters, they all revolve around Takayama, and I fucking hate
that. Yeah.
And not to say Takayama is not a bad character, it's just
I was just getting ready to say that it's nothing against Takayama. Like, he's a good boy, you know. It's yeah. Like in the show, and he's like, you know, he's not a generic insert
he's anime not
character, because in fact he's like a train otaku and all this stuff, so he's not like your normal main protagonist in those regards. And he actually does have personality, but at the same time, it's like, why is it that all these girls are just instantly into him? Like, Haruka, I understand after we finally learn more about her background and everything, but like all the rest of them just instantly, well, and then also Sushil, I think, yes, is how you said her name.
Yeah.
Like, and they were like, you know, kind of like childhood friends and you know, almost neighbors, not like they live nearby each other. Them I understood, but everything else, it's like, why?
Yes. What I wrote here is that Takayama is a very interesting character. At first glance, he's a typical harem protag. And what I mean by that, he's fucking clueless to what's going on around him in that sense. That's how it is. But as you mentioned, he is more defined because he is a trained otaku. He's incredibly intelligent. He has so much respect for the Japanese National Rail, its passengers, and his co-workers. And I think that's possibly due to his experience as a child, you know, when the driver came to save him, all of that information, right? And I thought it was incredibly admirable that he wants to be a driver because of it. However, I will say this.
However,
the traits that he wants to have, he wants to be a driver because the driver was kind, the driver saved his life, and he wanted to do that for others, right? And as admirable as that is, he feels that those traits are linked to the job. And I feel that that's the wrong reason, right? It's not defined by the job. It's in fact defined by the individual, because you could be a train driver and be a complete asshole. Like the train driver in episode 12, that was, don't touch my shit, don't get involved with the train. And we've seen it in the anime. It's not like we haven't. And I feel that he needs to believe himself more as a character, and even his friends have said that as well. So I kind of found it a bit annoying when he was still, even after that episode when they did the whole organ thing, and he mentioned it, and he was like, I'm proud to be part of this team, and then the very next episode he's like, I want to be a train driver. I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Like,
I thought that too. It's like, when he first said that, that's one thing that kind of threw me off. I was like, wait a minute. I was like, so in the episode before that, he said, I'm a part of this group. I'm, you know, part of K4, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm a member of the PSF. And then the very next episode, he has to reiterate to, you know, Haruka and Sakurai. He's like, I'm going to be a train driver.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. You just said you were like accepting your position. You were accepting. And like, because leading up to that too, they kept calling him deputy. They kept every time, you know, or, you know, the leader, like every single, you know, like moment they could, you know, like during the pedal train and all that stuff, they were like listening to him and reaffirming him as being their leader, like to reaffirm, like, this is where you need to be. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to be part of us. We need you. And then that episode, he's like, I'm going to be a train driver. I'm leaving you.
Exactly. Someday. It's such bullshit, because even Ida from the very beginning, she's like, hey, you're going to be the deputy, because she saw that in him. And she was like, look,
yeah,
clearly we need more people like you. So I'm going to give you this responsibility. And I think he's very, I wouldn't say clueless, but he's very driven by emotion, right? The fact that he wants to be a train driver, and it's in his head, I'm going to be a train driver because a train driver saved me and he was a great guy and I respect him. But then in episode 12, where the train driver is such an asshole and he's so rude. Okay. I'm like, okay, so then that should be proof that it's not about the role that you take. It's about you as a person. And I feel that he kind of has that disconnect. But regardless, I think there's nothing wrong with him as a character by any means.
Oh, not at all. But it's just one of those things where it's like you kind of want to like just flat out tell him, be like, look, we know this is your dream to be a driver, but this is your home.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's like, that's like, if you just wish that he would just wake up in real. And because the whole thing is like, it's like, and they told him several times during the show too, that even just being a member of the PSF, you're still always going to be around trains, you're going to be on trains. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think that's a better position for him too, is even though he wants to be a driver so bad, like, he even knew the details about the cars of the train, not just the train engine, but the ins and outs of all the cars and their layouts and what was in every room and like how even like different seats worked and seating arrangements. Like, it's not just about being a driver to him. And that's why I think his position as being, you know, the leader of this, you know, security department or the security force is the better fit for him. But he just doesn't even realize that.
And part of me thinks that he kind of refuses that because
he's got that one track mind. I'm going to be a driver. I'm going to be a driver.
Exactly. No pun intended. He's got that one track mind. And it's annoying as well that the characters in the show just accept it after a while, and they're like, oh, you know what, you'll be a great driver. And even Sakurai, where she's like, oh, hopefully I get to protect one of the trains that you're driving. And I'm like, really? Because logically speaking, he wants to protect the customers, right? That's his main focus, and it's always been about that. So protecting the customers, a train driver rarely does that. Okay, maybe they avoid accidents, but in this case, where in the show they've had like terrorists, you know, try and hijack a train, you know, kidnappers, all sorts of situations, even people that are groping other people on trains, right?
I would say this goes back to why I think also just being, you know, a PSF member on the train is better than for being trained, because you could tell through the series too that he's kind of like a people person. Like, he looks out for other people, he knows how to interact and treat people and talk with them. He's very observant about a lot of things too, which, like, train drivers in Japan, they are so focused on just driving the train and, you know, being safe and everything. That's the only thing that you talk about. Like, when you're on a train here, it's kind of like, it's almost like when you're on an airplane. I like, sometimes when you're getting off the airplane, the staff will wait at the front of the plane when you're getting off, like the captain, and like, you know, say thank you for the trip and all stuff. Same thing with train drivers. Like, they'll come out, like, you know, if they're like the trains here, for instance, you can drop your ticket off in a little box as you're getting off the train. The train driver will stand there and, you know, say goodbye and thank you as you're going off. But other than that, that's the only interaction that they have with anyone on the train. So it's like he would be missing out on that opportunity to talk with people too, you know, other
exactly.
than when the train is like at the station or saying goodbye to people as they get off the train. Like, could you imagine him walking around and seeing some kid on the train, you know, reading a book about trains? He could sit there and talk with them and, you know, give that child a good experience, you know.
He's done that with the prince, so it's like, it's
yeah.
It's very clear that I don't think he's fit to be a driver. And even in the situations where he's had to control the trains, like, I'll be fair with you, anyone else could have done that, especially in those episodes when they were delivering the organs. I don't think it was him as a driver that got the job done. I think it was him as a leader, as a deputy of their team, that done that, because it wasn't him as a driver, right? If that makes sense.
But then again, we don't get more, you know, beyond this show, you know, without reading the light novels to know if anything ever comes to fruition, or if he ever does wake up and be like, you know what, maybe this is a better fit for me.
Maybe. And that's the problem. We don't know about it. And there's a lot more to kind of leave to the imagination. I will say this about the other characters. They all follow particular tropes, right? Yes. So you have Sasho, who's a childhood friend. You have Haruka, which is like the Hime-sama type of situation and the kind of like motherly figure, similar to Himeji from Baka to Test. I got those vibes from her. And then you have Tsundere. You have your Tsundere character in Sakurai. Right? And then the only other character I kind of felt didn't get any sort of character development other than the fact that, hey, I'm strong, is...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Iwazumi. Yeah, that...
Iwazumi
that
got shafted, man.
So much, because like... The whole time I was like, oh, he's going to be best boy. But they don't do anything really with him other than, you know, when they need a strong arm and like a little bit of comic relief that he's always hungry and always wants to eat.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because he's a very interesting character. He's like, but they've dumbed him down. And we mentioned Iwazumi and how he doesn't have much character development. And I think the reason being is that the other characters wouldn't have as much character development as well if it wasn't for the fact that they're in the harem with Takeyama. So Takeyama, he's the main reason that they have character development, because Iwazumi is not in that harem, he's not going to get character development. And if these other characters weren't in the harem, no one would give a fuck about them, because they don't have as much character development. Like, I don't care about these characters as they are, because if you take away Takeyama, they're basically tropes. Tsundere, you have the motherly type, you know, childhood friend, that kind of stuff. And it's typical harem tropes, and I don't like that, because clearly there's much more to meet the eye to these characters than anything else, right? Because we do get some characters development earlier on with Haruka and the whole, you know, what happened many years ago. And there is a hint of character development with Aoi as well, because her defusing the bomb. So, you know, these are badass characters. These are characters with actual stories, but instead they're reduced to, oh, these are the love interests for Takeyama. And I thought that was, they got a little bit shafted in that.
Again, and this isn't a defense of it, not at all. But at the same time, I'm thinking about at the time when this also aired, though, too, it might not have been seen as much of a trope as it is now, watching it again, you know, 8 years later. But, you know, that's the easiest way to, they all fit into their little kind of niche, but that also led to not much in the way of character development for some of the characters like Iwazumi. But yeah, that's I don't really have a lot more to add to it other than what you've already said.
Moving on to art style and animation, I don't really have much to say regarding the art style. It's pretty bog standard for this era of anime. Like, if you looked at something like SAO or even this show, they were pretty similar. You know, there's not much that I could say about that.
I will say, though, that this is a hindsight type thing. Granted, in 2014, you wouldn't realize it, but now after seeing more of their shows, like, you can look at this now and tell it was a Passion show. Like, their character designs
that I
are
will agree.
Very, very, it's almost like how a lot of times, like how we talked before about how you can usually pick out a Dogokoba series. It's kind of like that. Now, there are a few outliers with Passion. Like, one show that I really like they did is called Hinako Note. But when you look at Hinako Note, you would think it's a Dogokoba show. Mm-hmm. But otherwise than that, like, Passion character designs and art style is very, very similar throughout. Now, and that's one, I'll give them a little bit of credit there too, because even though I didn't, like, look much into the light novels, I did want to look up some of the art, you know, how we talked about the creators earlier. And I will say that the character designs, even though they're a little bit flat in the anime, do really match the art style from the books as well, which is what they kind of did with High School DD. When they took over High School DD, they changed the character designs to more closely match.
Well,
it's
not just that. I mean, they did it with Interspecies Reviewers as well.
Oh yeah, Interspecies Reviewers, like, you know, as much flack as that show gets, it's literally like, it's the manga, you know, come to life.
Yeah,
pretty much.
The one thing I did notice was the 3D animation, and we've mentioned on Kunai before that we always say good 3D animation is animation that you don't realize. You know, when we're talking about something like that sticks out like a sore thumb, like in Overlord, for example, that's examples of bad 3D animation. This is where 3D animation excels, right? Because you're not using it to fill out a crowd. You're using it to show off a machine. You're using it to show off a vehicle. And I think that's where good 3D animation comes into play. I will say this, because obviously that is Studio Orange that's dealing with it. There is some pieces of scenery, especially when you're looking into it from a first person angle, very low poly. Like when they're going out of tunnels in episode 8 during the daytime, I'd notice it. I was like, this looks like a PS1 game. And there's certain bits that they don't really care about in terms of 3D. I think they mainly focused on the trains and things like that. But it leads to me to question it, because I don't think they made those models. I don't think they modeled all those trains, because I remember when I was studying architecture and we used to use cars, like if you wanted to test a render, sometimes you'd find a model of a BMW online, or like a teapot or a train even. And you can actually find very specific model numbers. And I'm pretty sure that there are train otaku out there from Japan that have gone in and, you know, made these 3D models where you can purchase them or you can get them, download them for free. Because when I was looking at them, they weren't as detailed as I thought they would be. And I understand that if you make them too detailed, it kind of looks a bit out of place within the show. But one scene in particular that made me think that this was a 3D model that was purchased from elsewhere online or one that they got for free was when the carriages were linking together and the clasp, that looked incredibly basic to me. And I was like, okay, it's clear that they didn't model these, that they just found these models online and kind of manipulated them to do some animation with them. Not to say that's a bad thing, it's just something that I noticed. But all in all, the 3D was incredibly good in this show.
Yeah, well, in just to kind of play devil's advocate a little bit in those regards too, like I said, we are talking about a show that's 8 years old, and a lot has changed in, you know, even CG animation, mm-hmm. you know, in the anime aspect in that regards. Like I said, if you've looked at any of the trailers for Trigun Stampede, that's getting ready to drop like any minute now, that like when I first saw stills for Trigun Stampede, I was like, oh, this doesn't look good. But then when I actually saw the trailers, I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm on board.
Other than that, I don't really have anything else to say in terms of audio visual apart from the OP and ending.
I mean, as far as, you know, just my comment, the overall animation, everything is that, you know, it's fine, it's serviceable, it's nothing that you're going to be like, oh, this is ugly, but it's also nothing to be like, oh my god, this is amazing. It's just, you know, it's more than standard animation, but it's not amazing either.
One thing I liked about the opening and the ending, back in the day I used to skip openings and endings all the time. This was one I never used to skip endings, and I never used to skip opening for this particular anime, which was unusual for me.
For this rewatch, I didn't skip either any, you know, for any episode. I love them. I think they're great.
They're fantastic. And I think it was one of the reasons that I started watching the show. And that's very rare. Like, you don't, you know, find an anime OP randomly out in the wild and like, oh, I want to watch the show because of its OP, it was so good. And this is one that I'll actually listen to on a daily basis. I've been listening to it while I'm editing Kunai, when I'm editing Galp and stuff like that, which I really do like. I will say this, for the rewatch, I actually enjoyed the ending a lot more than the opening. And I remember that a lot of anime during that time was incorporating dubstep. You know, if we're talking about Free, if we're talking about SAO, a lot of anime, for some reason, I think it might have just been a trend just to have like dubstep and stuff. Another thing that I will mention is that the ending was very nostalgic. Like, it felt very 90s. Like, it reminded me of the Gundam Wing openings. Like, one of the tracks, Rhythm Emotion. I don't even remember that song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
It was very reminiscent of that. And I loved that because I was a big fan of Gundam Wing when I was a child. So, all in all, fantastic opening and endings. I did also like, and I know this isn't necessarily opening and endings, but I did really enjoy after the EDs, the characters would give a plot summary. And this happens a lot of the time for a lot of anime. It doesn't happen as much now, but back in the day, it was something that was very prevalent. It's not really unusual for anime, but what I did enjoy with this show is that Takayama would actually let you know for the next episode what trains you're gonna see. And I thought that was really cool. Like, you can actually get hyped for the next episode because these trains are gonna be featured. I thought that was really cool. I thought that was a nice feature, especially for those who are train otakus or train spotters.
I will say that, similar to you, I paid a little bit more attention with the ED and the post-ED parts, you know, during this rewatch. But otherwise, and that, like I said, you know, I really enjoyed both. I enjoyed both the music aspect and the visual aspect of it. One thing that, like, I'll note about, like, the OP specifically, and I don't really know why, but every time I watch it, it would give me vibes of the first Strike the Blood opening,
yeah,
which is one of my favorite openings scenes of like all time. Like, I mean, if it's not my all-time favorite, it's definitely up there. So, and I put this right alongside that. The opening is just really, really good. The ending is just, it's very, you know, I mean, both are upbeat, but the ending is very upbeat and catchy. It's like, it kind of just puts you in a good mood. Yeah. Whereas like the opening kind of gets you hyped for that episode you're about to watch.
100% agree with you. And then finally, we're just going to end the show because we've mentioned our gripes and grumbles throughout the show. Now it's kind of more integrated in Kunai. I just want to know, Will, do you want to see a second season?
I mean, just because of all the open-ended questions and things like that and the lack of character development, if there were a second season that would go in more in those regards, I would say yes. But, you know, other than that, it's fine as a little self-contained thing as it is.
So for me, I thought that a second season isn't really needed because the show is very self-contained. If I do want to see more of Rail Wars, I would maybe see an OVA, like one additional episode.
Yeah, like I would like to maybe see them do not necessarily an OVA, but do some specials based on the spinoff books.
Okay, that's something else that I want to mention as well. Like, not just that, I like in terms of the OVA, I wanted to see like maybe an episode where we see do they continue, like that kind of stuff. Like, okay, Takeyama, did he end up becoming a driver or not? That maybe like a glimpse into the end of Rail Wars, right? Like literally, although that is not possible because by the time this aired, there wasn't much light novel to go off of anyway. Literally the light novel ended during COVID. Like it's been going on for like 8 years. It's insane, right? So it's something that has been going on for a while. It's interesting as well that you mention Rail Wars spinoffs. I did write this down that I do want to see some of the spin-offs. There is two spin-offs. There's one that's kind of more exotic in the sense that it's like more like beach fan service type light novel with the original cast of characters. And then there's another spin-off. It's not necessarily a spin-off. It's more so like a recreation of Rail Wars, if that makes sense. It's called Rail Wars A. So it's not necessarily meant to be a spin-off of Rail Wars. I think it's like a retelling of Rail Wars. And that got started literally in 2021, a year after the original Rail Wars ended. It's written by the same guy, but the illustrator, you mentioned before that the illustrator of the previous one was really into like, you know, girls and
girls trains. And trains. Like, yeah. If you look up his Pixiv account, that's like his entire account.
Do you know what the new illustrator is into? Women what? With guns. And if you look at the artwork, it's literally women with like sniper rifles and like shotguns. And I'm like, okay, so I obviously can't read Japanese, so I don't know what the light novel is about. It's still Rail Wars. It's still set in the same universe, right? But I don't know if it's a prequel because I looked briefly and they mentioned a particular name. And this was what leads me to believe that I think they were mentioning the grandfather of Haruka, because they mentioned that name. They said director so and so, and I was like, is that Haruka's grand, like, obviously because I've never seen or I've never read the original light novel, I don't know what is this about. And they were talking about how he kind of got started, so part of me thinks that this was a light novel that's intended for the early days, like a prequel light novel almost. I would like to see that, because then I think that would also answer a lot of questions as well. Like if they made that into an anime, and the fact that it is a relatively new light novel makes me think that maybe one day we could get an anime adaptation. But it all depends on how well that light novel sells in Japan, because that's how, you know, they decide to make anime and stuff like that. They tend to make anime off existing successful, you know, series. What's your overall opinion on the show? Like, would you recommend it to anyone, and who would you recommend this show to?
I mean, it's a really hard show to recommend. Again, like, I know it sounds like a cop-out because it seems like the last few shows that we've talked about, it's been one of those things where, like, I would recommend it to people with a niche point of view, which would be the same thing with this. I like, if you're an ecchi fan, if you're a train fan, you know, if you're an action fan, if you're all those rolled into one, sure. But like to a general audience, no.
I agree with you on that. And initially when I saw that the only way to get this anime is through Blu-rays and DVDs and stuff, at least legally, I was a bit upset because I was like, this was on HIDIVE at one point, this was on Crunchyroll at one point, where has it gone? And I think the reason being is because who is the target audience? It's not for Westerners. Because I have a feeling, yeah, Will, that you can, you know, watch this in Japan in some capacity, right?
I'm almost positive it's on Nico Nico.
Yeah, so, you know, it's available in Japan because obviously this is something that is designed for a Japanese Japanese market. And, you know, we talk about anime all the time, and I think this was kind of an era where anime wasn't really as popular as it is now. It wasn't, you know, anime was popular, but not as it is now. I don't think a lot of animation studios kind of made anime that was more so universal in terms of appeal. As you said, Will, before, this is clearly a show that's designed for pubescent teens in Japan, right? Kids that like, you know, cute girls and trains, right?
This show is 100% aimed, I would say, at boys between the ages of like 13 and 17 that are also into trains.
Exactly. And this is the problem, right? So I wouldn't recommend this to anyone to watch. Like, don't get me wrong. I went out and I did buy Blu-rays for it and DVDs and whatnot. So I went out of my way to watch this show. I understand why this show isn't legally available anymore, because it's not really designed for us, if that makes sense. It was a kind of like same thing with Denki Guy. Like, maybe the reason I didn't like Denki Guy in before was because I wasn't really into anime and manga. I didn't get myself immersed in that. So I feel that for you, in terms of the general public, to enjoy this show, you, as you mentioned, you really need to be in those niches. You need to be a fan of trains, and you need to not just fan of trains, you need to be a fan of Japanese trains. Like, it's very, very niche.
It's also the fact where a show like this has never even received a dub kind of says a lot, where even, like, you know, High School DD has a dub, you know what I mean? That's not to say it won't ever get one. I mean, we've seen Stranger Things, like, right now, like, even Sora Yori, which is one of my favorite anime of all time, is just now getting dubbed, and, you know, it's a five-year-old show. But yeah, again, it's hard to recommend a show like this that definitely was, you know, targeted at niche. I do hope more people do watch it and give it a chance. I definitely think it's better than the ratings and reviews that you see given for it online.
Yeah.
But that's, again, also coming down to the fact that most of the ratings and reviews you see are from, you know, Western anime fans. They're not coming from within Japan. And like I said, this is just, it's a very Japanese show. It's the only way I can really describe it.
I think also at the same time, you have to remember that a lot of these reviews tend to happen as people are watching them simulcasted. They don't tend to happen after the fact, and this was competing with a lot of shows. It didn't have a chance. Like, that's another thing. If it aired in a different season where there wasn't as much competition, I think it might have had a better reputation.
I don't know. Just like I said, just being someone who's you know, been around the block here for a while, I think it's just more comes down to that whole cultural difference, you know, especially now in the 2020s. And you know, we see some of the arguments and, you know, discussions that goes on with anime these days. I really think that the fan service itself would still turn a lot of people off. But then there's also going to be a lot of people that appreciate that as well. So, I mean, you might be right.
But yeah, that being said, we gave our opinions on the show, and hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode of Kunai. Will, as always, thank you for coming on.
It's been a pleasure. I'm glad that we got to talk about, you know, another, maybe, I don't want to call it a hidden gem, but maybe a lesser known show that we you know, were able to enjoy, and hopefully convince some other people to maybe give it a try, or if they've already watched it, maybe they can, you know, send in their own comments and things like that, and, you know, and see, you know, how they agree with us, how they don't agree with us.
Exactly, and that's the whole point of Kunai. If you guys don't agree with what we say, tell us about it. If you don't agree with it, you know, join our Discord, let us know, or tweet us on Twitter, because that's how we're going to make this conversation. That's the whole point of Kunai. It's not just us driving the conversation. We want to hear your opinions, good and bad, and even the ugly. So let us know that way. In addition to that, we are going to be covering more lesser known shows on Kunai, because to be fair with you, we want to kind of rekindle that. Like, I feel like on Kunai, when we started watching Kunai, a lot of the shows, if you look at the earlier episodes, the first ever episode of Kunai, we spoke about Hentai Prince and the Stony Cat. I don't know if you guys know this, it's no longer available to watch by streaming, which is unfortunate. And I know that there's a lot of people that will watch this on Kunai and they'll be like, oh, you know what, I want to go and watch that. They won't be able to unless they go and buy Blu-rays and DVDs. So we're going to go back and we're going to cover older shows, and not just older shows, but shows that may be forgotten about, because we want to bring attention to them. And sometimes they might not be the best shows, right? We mentioned this show. This show has its own problems, but the fact that we're mentioning them and the fact that we're kind of shedding light on them is because we don't want these shows to be forgotten about.
Absolutely. It's one of those things too, that even if it's like, maybe it's a show that maybe, you know, we at you know, Get Life Podcast and, you know, the Kunai Show, maybe it's a show that maybe we don't like as much, that maybe someone else out there really does, that or might, that might not know about it, or vice versa.
Exactly, and that's the whole point, and that's why we encourage you guys to let us know what shows you want us to cover, because the show is really determined by you guys as well as us, but more so you guys. So if you want to suggest something, we'll take that on board, and if it's something that maybe me and Will haven't seen before, or maybe it might be like, oh, this is a show that's on my anime list and I actually want to go and watch it, right? So that's the whole point of it. But speaking of Kunai, and speaking of the next episode of Kunai, I'm happy to announce that, Will, we're going to be covering The Pet Girl of Sakuraso, a fantastic rom-com anime. It's a 24 episode anime done by JC Staff. Fun fact, they're my favorite studio. And another thing to mention, this was my first simulcast anime.
Oh, it was the first one you watched while it was airing?
Exactly. The because I got into anime on the during the summer of 2012. That's when I watched Toradora. I watched it in August. This show came out in October, and this was the first show that I watched. So it should make an excellent discussion. If you do want to watch Pet Girl of Sakuraso, you can do on High Dive. We're not sponsored by High Dive, but obviously we still want to promote legal sources of anime. So go and check them out on High Dive. We won't put links in the description, but when it comes to for us to promote the episode, we will link High Dive, and because we love them at the end of the day, we personally use the service. I think it's a fantastic service. So that being said, bye
later.